Good morning. Good morning. Nice to see so many folks turning out today on what is going to be a very beautiful day, I think. My topic today is excuse me, Buddhism and faith. And it may surprise you a bit to hear that, I'm talking about faith. It may not, but it may be that faith may seem like something to you which is not really a natural fit with Buddhism. Faith may be something you encountered in another spiritual tradition that you actually left. That could be possible. And maybe you didn't expect to see it here. Just the word faith, I think, especially if we've encountered it in other places, in other contexts, can be a little troubling. It's even a little troubling within Buddhism, I think. If you looked at your program and you saw the two quotes from the Buddha that are on there, they may seem, at least on the surface, to be a little bit contradictory. So even a little troubling within Buddhism. But I like to explore the troubling areas. I think those are fertile grounds for learning stuff. When I introduce people to Buddhism, I like to start with something very basic. Although we put Buddha on the altar here, this is not the Buddha, this is Manjushri, but throughout the center we have other altars that have Buddhas on them. So we put the Buddha on the altar and we bow to the Buddha, but we don't worship the Buddha. We don't see the Buddha as a god. That's my view anyway. I have to say parenthetically that there are many approaches to Buddhism, and in some of them, the Buddha may very well look a lot like a god. And I respect those views, but in my approach, he is not. He was a human being, just like you and me, who found a way to wake up. And we can all find that way to wake up. We can all become Buddha. In fact, we're all Buddha already. We just don't realize it yet. So Buddhism, as I see it, could be called an atheistic spiritual tradition. Maybe you could call it an atheistic religion. It looks a lot like a religion, and our approach to life, the Soto Zen approach, has a lot in common with other religions, but we don't have a deity. Now, I don't want to imply that I am not open to mysterious things, magic, things unknown. I really have an open mind about those things, and I'll talk a bit more about those later. But I don't need to believe in anything supernatural in order to follow the Buddha's way. So why talk about faith? Rahula, Walpola Rahula, in a book called What the Buddha Taught, says, however you put it, faith or belief as understood by most religions has little to do with Buddhism. But it does appear in the Buddha's teachings. It's out there a lot. We come across it and we wonder what's going on. And we can't ignore that. We can't ignore the fact that for many of us, faith describes kind of an emotional phenomenon as well, something we feel. Most of us are not coldly rational when it comes to our spiritual practice. We have some faith, and it feels good. Maybe we can be okay with that. I think if this talk goes in that direction, where we can be okay with having faith, and it feels good, I think that would be fine. So Buddhists have a word for faith. It's translated usually as belief or faith. The word is shraddha. It's a Sanskrit word. It's S-H-R-A-D-D-H-A. In Pali, it's sada. And it pops up in several places in the teachings. And you probably know that Buddhists love to list things. And the Pali Suttas list faith as one of the seven treasures, which are the dhanas, one of the five spiritual faculties, which are the indriyas, one of the four streams of merit, and one of the spiritual powers, which are balas. And please don't ask me to list all of the other ones of those. Also, you could say that faith is the basis for what is often listed as the first step on the Eightfold Path, which is right view. We have the Four Noble Truths here, pretty basic, about how there is suffering, how suffering is caused by desire, how we can end our suffering by ending our desire, and how there is an Eightfold Path to do this. And the Eightfold Path, you can approach these eight things in any order. It's not a program that you go through. You do one, and then you do the next. But often, right view is listed as the very first one, and it really kind of makes sense. Right view really is, I think the best way to explain right view is the belief that there is a better way, kind of an understanding that there could be a better way. Perhaps we come to the point where we realize that we've been kind of dragged around by our own point of view too long, that we're kind of a slave to our own point of view, that we keep imposing this on the world, and the world doesn't seem to conform exactly to our point of view. And that keeps coming back, and we would like a little freedom. We would like to just let the world be for a while. So we get this kind of light bulb moment, like maybe there's a better way. Maybe there's something else I can do. Maybe I can live my life a little more deliberately. So that's right view, and that's faith. I think there's some faith there. It's the very beginning of our path. And after right view becomes right thinking or right knowledge, where we begin to investigate things and we decide what direction we might want to go. And we have to have some faith, because it's always about pursuing a certain line of thought. Yes, I'm willing to go further here. Yes, I'm willing to believe this could take me someplace good, although I don't know yet that that's going to be true. So faith has to be based on something. It has to be based on something we see, an example of some kind. There's an example from the Buddha's own life. There's a very well-known story of how the Buddha was sheltered as a child and did not encounter suffering. And one day he went out from the palace and he saw three sights. He saw a sick person, an old person, and a corpse. And he realized that there is suffering in the world. That's the story. And the fourth thing he saw was a wandering monk or a wandering holy person, and he noticed that this person had a very serene kind of bearing. And something really struck him when he saw this person, because he had become really upset when he saw these sights and realized how there was human suffering and was maybe almost in despair. But then he saw this person and thought, well, maybe there's a way to end suffering. Maybe there's a way to be really serene in the midst of this very difficult life. And I'm going to look into that. And he kind of put that thought away. And after a few more years, he decided to go out on his own personal quest to find a way to end suffering. So he had faith based on what he observed. And I think a lot of us have this. We arrive here. We think there might be something good here. Maybe we heard it from a friend or something, or we've studied Buddhism elsewhere, and we think, you know, I think that looks pretty good. We look around, we see how people are doing. I can remember when I came here, going on long retreats and kind of looking around, looking at Tim, looking at Dokai, people who had been practicing for years and years in the Zendo, and about the fifth day of the retreat, I begin to settle down enough to see how settled down they are, and open up, and I watch them, you know, during Oryoki folding their napkin or something, and I go, wow, there's something going on there that I've never even really quite seen. This is really deep. There's some kind of deep serenity there, and I'm inspired to look into this a little further. So I'd like to look at the Buddha's own words on faith a little bit. The Buddha encouraged his followers to have faith in him. And this is, I think, the second quote on your program. He says, and how does a noble disciple possess seven good qualities? Here a noble disciple has faith. He places his faith in the Tathagata's enlightenment. That's the Buddha's enlightenment. Thus, the Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed. I think he means taming their desires, not taming them exactly. Teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. So he promotes faith. And in another place, he indicates that you need faith in a teacher. Once he was teaching in the village of Sala in the Kosalan country. This village was situated at an entrance to a forest. So all of these wandering spiritual seekers would come through there on their way to the forest, and they would stop overnight in Sala. and they would expound their own views and they would tear down the views of others. And the poor folks in Sala were perplexed. They couldn't commit to any particular teaching because there were so many different views they were seeing. And when they gathered, the Buddha simply asked, "Is there any teacher agreeable to you in whom you have acquired faith supported by reasons?" And they replied, "No, there is no teacher agreeable to us in whom we have acquired faith supported by reasons." And the Buddha said, "Well, you can follow my way. You can check it out, and hopefully you will follow one teacher." So the Buddha is saying here that faith matters, but also that it must be supported by reasons. And that's the key to understanding the faith in Buddhism. It must be supported by reasons. So, as a kind of aside, it's also important to note here that the Buddha is saying that you need to have faith in one teacher. If you don't choose one teacher, you can probably advance only so far. And this is interesting when I think about our center, because we have a number of teachers here. We have a number of really wonderful teachers here. And students here, I think, can really benefit from that, because you can get different kinds of support. You can go to different teachers who have different styles. And I think that's wonderful. That's what our center is about, and I want that to continue. But I suppose any blessing is kind of a mixed blessing. And it seems that one could maybe use the availability of many teachers to avoid ever settling on one teacher, and that one teacher who might challenge you a little more. So that's just something I think we need to be aware of in our center. But back to the Buddha's words on faith. The Buddha encouraged faith, but he also cautioned against the wrong kind of faith. He once asked his monks, "What if someone were to ask you, how do you know the Buddha is enlightened? What do you base that upon?" He said, "Here's a proper answer. You should say, well, I approached the Buddha so I could hear the Dharma the Buddha taught me at higher and higher levels. As he did so, through direct knowledge of the teaching here in the Dharma, I came to a conclusion about the teachings and placed confidence in them." And the Buddha says that when things are done in this way, faith is supported by reasons, it's rooted in visions, and it's firm. There is an investigation of the Tathagata in accordance with the Dharma. So in Buddhism, we do not encourage blind faith. We encourage just the opposite. Always question. We think that will make the Dharma stronger, not weaker, and it'll make your practice of the Dharma stronger, not weaker, if you question it. And another time, he was speaking to some people from Kalama. And he said, this is the first quote on your program, and I'm not going to read it, I'm going to expand on it a little bit. That quote is kind of a condensation of his 10 criteria for discerning your truth. And these are 10 things you should watch out for when people present ideas to you. The first is, don't accept and believe something to be true just because it has been passed along and retold for many years. Something has been repeated again and again. If it's repeated enough times, people may believe it. And we see that sometimes in our country. Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11. That got repeated so many times, and I think a lot of people still believe it. And I think people deliberately have repeated that because they understand this principle. Second, don't believe in something merely because it has become a traditional practice. That's something to watch out in Zen, and I've heard stories about how a teacher makes a mistake and everybody starts doing it that way, and pretty soon people have been doing this for four generations, and it can happen. Do not accept and believe something simply because of reports and news of it spreading far and wide. Don't believe something just because it is cited in a holy scripture. Don't believe something solely on the grounds of logical reasoning. Logic is merely one branch of knowledge. If its data or inferences are incorrect, it can go wrong. Don't believe something because it appears correct on the grounds of philosophy. Don't believe something simply because of superficial thinking. Don't make snap judgments based on your tendencies of thought. Don't believe something merely because it agrees or fits with one's preconceived opinions and theories. I think that's a good one. Because we can do this. And it's sad if we begin to look at the world this way. But sometimes we can have a tendency to do this. We get an idea of what the world is, our accepted view of the world, and if something fits that worldview, we let it in, and if something does not fit our worldview, we reject it. So our worldview is never challenged. Number 9, don't believe something just because the speaker appears believable. Now, the speaker may have a certain title, the speaker may have special clothing, the people may have certain marks of status. That doesn't necessarily mean that you should believe everything the teacher is saying. And finally, don't believe something simply because the speaker is my teacher, because you've committed to this person. So clearly, as the quotes on the program indicate, faith is something wonderful, but it's something to be careful about too. I found an article by a person named Bhikkhu Paiuto that really resolves this contradiction. He's a scholar and a Thai Buddhist monk, and he's written on many subjects, widely respected. He's written about faith and science and Buddhism. And he says that most religions use emotion as the energy for attaining their respective goals. Emotion is an inspiration that arouses belief and obedience in the teachings. And emotions, particularly those which produce faith, are necessarily a part of many religions. And so in these religions, emotion is encouraged. While faith is the most important force in most religions, Buddhism stresses wisdom, giving faith a place of importance only in the initial stages. Even then, faith is often used very carefully, as wisdom is considered to be the prime factor in following the Buddha's way. Faith does have a place in the Buddhist teachings, but in a different role. There are also elements of faith in scientific research. So there are two kinds of faith, he says. The first kind of faith is that which obstructs wisdom. It relies on inciting or even enforcing belief, and such belief must be complete and unquestioning. To doubt the teaching is forbidden. The first kind of faith does not allow any room for wisdom to develop. He says faith in most religions is of this variety. Now, I don't want to generalize too much about any religion. And in my encounters with other religions, I see a lot of open-mindedness out there. For example, we have a lot of people coming here to the center to find out what we're all about. We have groups of people coming here, groups of young people. And often these are sent by church groups, by people from other religious organizations that want young people going to that church to be exposed to other kinds of religions. And I think it's wonderful. I think it shows a great open-mindedness. But still, we all know that there are tendencies sometimes to really ask for unquestioning faith. Those things do come up. This feature of religion is known as dogma. Buddhism, however, is a religion free of dogma. Well, one would hope anyway. That's where we want to go. The second kind of faith is a channel for wisdom, however. This kind of faith stimulates curiosity. It's the incentive to begin learning. Faith arises in a certain person or a teaching or something like that, and it gives us a starting point. If we have faith in a person, we'll go to that person and we'll ask questions. If we have faith in a community of monks, we will go to those monks and sit with them. So I think it's time for a definition of faith. Rahula's definition is confidence born of conviction. I like that. And I'd like to offer another definition, a little longer definition. Faith is an open-hearted willingness to go further in Buddhist practice, inspired by example, and continually tested against personal experience. Faith is an open-hearted willingness to go further in Buddhist practice, inspired by example, and continually tested against personal experience. So it's an educated leap into the unknown. So this is kind of a complex view of faith, a little bit complex. What does this mean for our practice here and now? How can we use faith as a help rather than a hindrance in our practice? I've come up with 4 principles, because Buddhists love lists. Number 1, rather than having blind faith, we should base faith on inquiry. And we follow something that's a lot like the scientific method. One expression of that sense of inquiry was set forth by Asanga, who is a Buddhist philosopher of the 4th century. He said that Shraddha has three aspects. One, full and firm conviction that a thing is. Two, serene joy at good qualities. And three, aspiration or wish to achieve an object in view. And I think back to when I met my first teacher, when I attended a Korean Zen temple in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And I met my first teacher, Suka, whose name is now Haju. And it began with this full and firm conviction that a thing is. I saw her genuineness and her kindness and her calmness and her great ability to sort of quietly expound the Dharma and her dedication to building this wonderful center, which is a lot like our center. And I had a full and firm conviction that that was a really positive thing, that that was something to be emulated. And number two, I had serene joy at these good qualities. This made me really happy to see this, and that made me think that, well, if it gives me joy, it must be a good thing. And third, aspiration or wish to achieve an object in view. You know, well, maybe I can be somewhat like this too if I apply myself. Thich Nhat Hanh talks a little bit about a comparison with a scientist. He says, if you make a scientific discovery, you're going to publish the results. Most people are not specialists in the field, and they're not going to investigate the results themselves, and they're just going to follow. I'm one of those people when it comes to science. E equals mc squared. I really believe that, but I haven't tested it out. I haven't conducted the experiments. I believe that based on what people tell me. But some people will review a scientific article and try to duplicate the results. They have to check for themselves, and of course that's important for science to advance. When it comes to the practice of Buddhism, we should be like the latter type, Thich Nhat Hanh says. In the Buddhist world, we are all specialists, you might say. We can only know that the Buddha's methods of ending suffering work if they work for us personally. We take responsibility. That's the deal. We can't rely on others. This has to come from us. The practice has to come from inside. We can't rely on others, you know. The Buddha is not a god, and the Buddha is not going to come and do this for you. And the bodhisattvas are not going to come and do it for you. They may support you, but it has to come from you, sitting, being mindful, doing the work. So number two is embrace the emotional component. Faith does have the rational component that I've been stressing, and it should, but there's also an emotional component. And to Paiuto, this seemed kind of suspicious, what I told you about Paiuto just a little while ago. He said that emotion is something that religions manipulate for their own ends. Now, I agree that manipulating people's emotions is a bad thing, and we should avoid it. But I also think that we can't deny that emotion and faith are intertwined. And I don't think that that is necessarily a bad thing. There is great power there. There is really great power. Thich Nhat Hanh lists faith as one of the five powers. And he says, when we have faith, a great energy in us is released. And that may sound familiar to some of you. Maybe coming here or going somewhere else or being solitary, but having some kind of a spiritual opening, some kind of a spiritual experience. You may have had this moment, you know, when something happened and you just felt absolutely high because it was so beautiful. And it may have felt a bit like falling in love. This thing happens. There's great energy there and it's very positive. And if we don't get carried away, this is a great thing. This is a great thing. I remember the first day I showed up at that Buddhist temple in Ann Arbor. It was on Buddha's birthday in 1992. And I walked in and they were having this little festival and I did a little sitting and I heard a talk by a monk and I looked around and I've described this, I talked about this just recently, that it felt like arriving at home. I felt like I had arrived at home. This is where I was meant to be all of that time when I was so confused. This is the place. And so I'm going to explore this thing. So I had faith. I had a lot of strong faith at that point. And it changed my life. It really did. But it wasn't blind faith. A lot led up to it. And that phrase I love, arriving at home, suggests I had some knowledge of what home was, you know, before I got there. I had thought about these big questions on my own. And I had read about Buddhism on and off for about 20 years. I had meditated on my own. I had met a few people who practiced some kind of Eastern religion. I had met some really spiritual people who had inspired me. So I had a lot of time to test things out and against my own experience. And when I found out about Buddhism, I kind of had this sense of recognition. Oh, yeah, that fits my worldview, this thing I haven't been able to quite articulate, but no self. I kind of get that. And I also saw a lot of signs indicating that this temple was the real thing, and I could trust these people not to lead me astray. I saw how it was connected with this really larger tradition that had been going on for years and years. It wasn't something that someone had just sort of made up a few years ago. So one of the early Dharma talks I heard that year was by my first teacher, and the subject of the Dharma talk was how you shouldn't trust teachers. And at the end of the Dharma talk, she said, "Any questions?" And somebody threw a cushion at her. And I thought that was pretty good. I thought, I'm in the right place. This is the right place. Of course, I don't want to take this too far. I don't want to say, you know, never trust the teacher about anything. My hope is you'll investigate the teacher and decide that the teacher really has something to say and that you will work with that teacher. And I think all of our teachers here are wonderful and really have a lot to say and a great deal of kindness and can offer you a great deal of support if you only want it, if you're only open to it. And I know it may feel a little scary to be open in that way, but you can trust, but don't take my word for it. So home, I arrived at home, and that's a beautiful place to be. There was a king once who said to the Buddha, "When I look at the Sangha, I have faith in the Buddha and the Dharma." And I think that's how it works. People inspire me. My first teacher inspired me. Tim and Dokai inspired me. The teachers here, all of you guys, I'm continually inspired by things that people do here, just this quiet commitment to practice, coming early in the morning and not making a big deal, but coming early in the morning and sitting and doing that morning after morning. That's really beautiful stuff. That really helps me. You don't know how much that helps me. There's something really powerful going on here, and I'm willing to go forward toward that. And the emotion that comes with that is okay. I'm aware of that. You know, I'll watch it. I won't let it get out of hand. So you can embrace that emotion. 3 is, obvious by now, we exercise some caution so that this emotional high doesn't turn into some kind of blind faith. We hold a little bit back. If we find we've stopped questioning, we're in trouble. Even if we're working very closely with a teacher, we hold a little bit back. We never give ourselves away, not completely. We have a responsibility to ourselves. And 4, I've talked extensively about being cautious this morning and using the scientific method and being rational and not needing to believe in magic, but I think it would be tragic if we took this so far that we would not be open to the mystery, to the unknown, and to the magical. Because we simply cannot know. We cannot know. The fact that we can't prove something scientifically does not mean that it could not exist. Now, it may seem like I'm throwing you kind of a curve right now because I've been talking all this time about being cautious, and now I'm talking about embracing the magic. But there's really no contradiction. Being cautious about being quick to believe is consistent with being very open about what you may ultimately believe. You can be cautious about being quick to believe while being very open about what you may believe. For example, I'm not going to believe simply because someone tells me it's true that there's a bodhisattva with healing powers. But if I test that idea against my own experience, I may come to believe it. And for this part of the talk, I'm indebted to my wife, Kathy, who told me about a conversation she had with our visiting teacher, Norman Fisher, when he was here last. She's an ex-Catholic, and she was talking to him, and she was taking kind of a hard line with him against faith. And he, and I've heard this like secondhand, so I'm really paraphrasing here, but she said he talked about how sad it would be to require proof of everything, how you could miss so very much that way. And I feel like I'm pretty open to the mysterious and the magical and the unknown. I've had some encounters with it, like in ceremonies. Recent ceremony here that I had because I've experienced a loss lately, and I just cannot tell you how dramatically and beautifully it affected me. It just, something magic. I mean, just this great turning as a result of a ceremony. It just, it can't be explained. I think there was some real magic there. So, that's what I have to say about faith in Buddhism. So just to review, the four principles are, number one, be deliberate about faith, follow something like the scientific method. Two, embrace the power of the emotion that comes with faith. Three, be cautious. And four, do not be so cautious that you cannot be open to the unknown. So, that's it. And I would very much welcome comments or questions, if there are any. Yes, Kate. Zazen requires faith. I think it does.
I think at the most fundamental level, if you want to talk about merit,
mm-hmm.
practice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because
otherwise, why would you sit there?
Right. Mm-hmm. And you may start out and maybe it's hard, you keep at it, and then it starts feeling really good. It's like, wow, this is really working. And then you're kind of enjoying it, and then it kind of goes away, and you're going, this is not working at all. And it can get really hard. And we all have those periods, I think, no matter how long we've been sitting, where it's just you kind of question why you're there, and it really requires faith to stick with it. And it's good to stick with it. It's good to stick with it, because it's not going to give you constant and immediate rewards. It just doesn't work that way. So, yeah. Yes, Cal.
Yeah, Murphy might say that most of Buddhism is non-theistic rather than theistic or atheistic.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tibetan Buddhism, I think in some ways, you know, is kind of theistic. They believe in gods and entities.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some radical forms that are atheist. But I think non-theistic is kind of in the middle. It's neither the one nor the other, not the affirmation nor the negation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Could you folks in the Founders Hall hear that? Kind of.
You think non-thinking, you know.
Mm-hmm. Non-thinking. Cal is saying that we could say non-theistic rather than atheistic, because it's kind of like some approaches to Buddhism are kind of theistic, like the Tibetan approach, which has various gods, goddesses, entities. Non-theistic is more in the middle between theistic and atheistic.
Internalistic and nihilistic also, you could say. Nihilistic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Nihilistic and nihilistic.
Yeah. Okay.
So rather than middle road.
Mm-hmm. Right. Middle road, that's good. Thank you. Wanda.
Yeah. I really appreciate this talk where you're pointing out the various dimensions of faith.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add one that I've read myself where Buddha said that Shraddha is the type of faith that a bird has in the tree that he builds his nest with.
Mm-hmm.
And so when Kate said something about you have to have faith to do Zazen, I was thinking that's the type of very subtle faith that we need to, when we're sitting Zazen, because it's so light and it's almost dimensionless, you know, the type of faith that a bird has in the tree that it builds its nest in. It's supportive, but at the same time, it doesn't command anything, it's just open. So I just wanted to add that.
Yeah. Thank you. That was nice. Yes, Pat.
As much of this faith in ourselves.
Faith in ourselves. Absolutely. Absolutely.
To choose the path or keep on the path.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of ironic because we talk about self so much, but you need a strong sense of self to do this. You have to start from a solid place, You have to have, I think, belief in your own abilities to sort these things out. Because as I said, no one can do this stuff for you. And we shouldn't confuse no self, which is recognizing that everything is interdependent, with sort of not asserting ourselves in the world and trying to do this stuff well. I mean, we do, in a sense, have a self, and we need to use it to pursue this practice. Yeah. Yes.
I just want to add to that. I remember, like, a good quote from the Buddha was, "In order to fully, like, throw away the self, you have to have it firmly in your hand. So you have to, like, know yourself before you can kind of get rid of it." But
right.
Yeah, I had a question too. So, like, you know, when it comes to faith and stuff, I think that, you know, sometimes it's easier to have, like, you know, self-limiting or, like, self-doubting thoughts, and it's like, how would you say, like, how can I break through those and realize, like, you know, your full potential that we really truly have, you know? So, is there a faith that is a component of that, or
Yeah. So the question is about how we break through self-doubting thoughts, and whether faith is a component of that. Well, I found something really helpful with self-doubting thoughts is to realize that, ironically, self-doubting thoughts all come from ego. We think of it as sort of being anti-ego, like, I'm no good, that sort of anti-ego. But really, self-doubting thoughts are coming from a place of thinking about how you want to be. You know, it's about how you are, how you should be. Those doubts, it's really your ego expressing all of those doubts. And I think to spend time with that and ask that and sitting on kind of a deep level, you know, who is it that's having these doubts? Who is having these doubts? To spend time with that, I think that can be helpful. So, anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Susan. Okay, we have announcements.